What's up, Dune fans? Welcome back to the Do Not Enter podcast, where today we come home to the smell of feet and spice. I'm your host, Humphrey Hsu, and joining me are my friends and co-hosts, Fillmore John.
What's up, guys?
And Nolan Zhang.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone. I don't know what episode this is, but this will be chapter 36 of Dune, and it's a full chapter this time.
Yes, I could do the epigraph again.
Yeah, I know, right? That's very exciting. Just a fun fact, this is actually our second take of this episode. The first take had some technical difficulties and where my friends Nolan and Fillmore, their voices were unfortunately unheard of on the recording. So I didn't want to be the only one talking, so I decided, we should do it again.
Solo leveling out here.
Yeah. Yep. It's just me and my conversation with my two imaginary friends.
Yeah, right? Him and Casper the ghost.
Indeed.
Do you want to also explain why we couldn't record last week?
Oh yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. So last week I was quite sick and also very busy. So on top of being sick, I couldn't sleep a lot. Of course that doesn't help recovery, but now, fortunately, I'm feeling a lot better, and I'm really glad to be back here with you guys recording.
I'm glad to have you back.
Yep.
Last week was just so bad because all the teachers tried forcing their grades in before Thanksgiving. It's like, wow, I highly appreciate this.
Yeah, so basically all the teachers, procrastinated too much, and they realized, wow, we have grade deadlines to meet before Thanksgiving. So, there's that, and we were forced to pay the price.
Very, very rough times.
Yeah, but we're here. We made it through, and we get to discuss chapter 36 for the second time. So, very, very fun stuff. Cool. Yeah, so without further ado, Nolan, take it away with the epigraph.
Okay, so it says, Muad'Dib tells us in a time of reflection that his first collisions with Arakeen necessities were the true beginnings of his education. He learned then how to pull the sand for his weather, learned the language of the wind's needle stinging his skin, learned how the nose can buzz with sand itch, and how to gather his body's precious moisture around him to guard it and preserve it. As his eyes assumed the blue of the Ibad, he learned the Chikobso way. Stilgar's preface to Muad'Dib the Man by the Princess Irulan. So just the first thing that I noticed was that it was a Stilgar's preface to Muad'Dib the Man. So that means Stilgar got a special place in one of Paul's books. And I just really like that.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Stilgar's staying around.
Yeah, Stilgar's hanging around. Clearly since this book is written in the future, it's pretty clear that, Stilgar somehow got closer to Paul somehow. And so he earned this special place. And it also sort of implies that, Stilgar won't lose his life anytime soon. So
Does that also mean that he acts as sort of a father figure for him now that Leto's gone? Because Paul still needs some guidance.
Yeah, he definitely needs guidance, especially in this time, and especially because he doesn't really trust his mother anymore, and his mother was sort of the mentor figure before. I mean, we still need to kind of see what's going on there, but for now Stilgar seems to be a good person, so I'd hate for him to be killed off like Kynes or someone or Leto.
Well, I mean, Leto had a purpose for his death. Yeah. Kynes was just sort of random.
I mean, Leto's death, he killed that Mentat. I'm suddenly forgetting his name.
He killed Pitter.
Pitter, so.
It was a trade-off.
Yeah. So, but still didn't get the Baron, Yeah, but
anyway. Because he had plot armor.
Yep. Strong armor.
Just got away from Paul. Another thing I noticed from this epigraph is that Paul wrote another book called A Time of Reflection that wasn't mentioned in any of the other epigraphs. So Paul really is like a published author now. But at the same time, with how many books that he has, kind of reminds me that of like the cults of personalities that I've been learning history class.
Okay.
It's kind of weird, just like Paul having his own little like literature surrounding who he is and what he's so great about. Something else I noticed was that while I was reading the book, well, no, not the book, but the epigraph, was the phrase, he learned then how to pull the sand for its weather. So pull typically isn't a verb. So I tried really hard to look on the internet for a verb of the word pull. But the only like verb that Google said was like, how gondola drivers, like they put the pull in the water and push it. So like that's like, I tried to use that context of po in this phrase, but it still didn't work out. So what do y'all think po means?
So I think po maybe just means, P-O-L-L. Of course, it's spelled P-O-L-E, but I kind of think of it as the homonym or whatever that's called, right? So P-O-L-L as in literally, you know, that's basically, you know, that's the verb I kind of imagine. Is
so you're surveying the sand?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Kind of taking a look and observing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the same vein, I was thinking that he was just inspecting it to see what the weather was like. What the weather is like for the sand, I don't know what it is, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, kind of like I imagine kind of almost like Paul just like having a pole of like swirling like a churn of butter or something, like churning butter.
Okay.
But yeah. Like spice instead of swimming weather, I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. This entire epigraph is just full of like beautiful like writing using sensory input to really heighten the lessons that Paul is learning right now in the Arakin Desert. Kind of like a montage of Paul's training arc, really. Like, he's just learning so much. It's just compacted here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, and one last thing before we really get into the chapter. It's just the ending of this epigraph is super, like, I like it a lot. Because nowhere in the epigraph did it ever mention, like, Fremen. But there's so many, like, allusions to the Fremen. Like, i.e. the blue of the Ibad, which is referring to the spice-addicted eyes, a.k.a. the eyes of Ibad. But along with the Chocobso way, which refers to the mystic language that's very distinctive of Fremen culture, and, you know, Stilgar's preface. So just, like, all these, like, references that make you know that it's Paul afterwards, like, after he's, as a Fremen instead of, just a trader.
Someone who's kind of assimilated into their culture already. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
this is
just, like, more mature.
Far now, from the future, like, yeah. And, I mean, and that's, again, a little more hinting at the future. You know, Paul will eventually, whether he like it or not, and we'll also discuss that later, but whether he like it or not, he'll end up eventually adopting the Fremen ways.
And he'll appreciate all the lessons that he learned while adapting to the Fremen ways.
Yeah, he's going to become a true Fremen.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Right. Cool. Yeah, thank you for that. Before we get into the bulk of the chapter, let's do our quote section. So as usual, Filmer, you have the first quote.
Okay, so for my quote this week, I chose, "It came to him that he was surrounded by a way of life that could only be understood by postulating an ecology of ideas and values."
Cool.
Big words.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Postulate.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that since debate so long ago.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So my quote goes, "Caution's a worthy trait in a man who'd lead."
Yes, I prefer a cautious leader too.
These bombastic.
Instead of an impulsive leader.
Yeah, at least.
Uh-huh.
Indeed.
My quote is, "Don't you mourn him? In the time of mourning, I'll mourn him."
Yeah, very systematic and straightforward, but that's a whole discussion point we'll have later. And you know, the Fremen just keep surprising us. Yeah, okay.
Another dead.
Cool. So. Cool quotes, but this chapter is, of course, very interesting too. So let's dive right into it. Now we're back to Paul and Jessica and their Fremen story. Spending so long in Harko on Geti Prime with Fade Rautha and the Baron and everyone else we despise, right? But
yeah, I'm tired of seeing the Baron's fat rolls.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, he takes it on a whole nother level. He's, I don't know how many kilos, yeah. But we're just outside this siege, and we're about to enter. And Chani starts off by chastising Paul for not observing this proper moisture protocol. I mean, Paul was, I guess, caught slacking on the job, right?
Nope.
I thought he was supposed to know their ways, but I guess even Paul has his limits.
Yep, definitely.
Although it's pretty nice to see that Chani is looking out for Paul. It looks like the ship has already sailed.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, I mean, they're that much closer together.
Yeah. Yep. Chani just fixing that steel suit up for Paul.
Yeah.
It's like fixing up a tuxedo.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Just brushing it off. Mm-hmm. Also, it's also kind of emphasized really just start right off the bat in this chapter, because the first sentence goes that Stilgar's troop returning to the siege with his two strays from the desert, referencing Paul and Jessica as the two strays, which is kind of, I don't know, a little bit like code, but at the same time, true. You know, there's still strays to the group of Fremen.
Yeah, they still haven't fully integrated into their culture yet. Not like the Paul we saw in the epigraph, right? Who was already fully integrated, but you know, they're still here. You know, it just reminds me a few chapters ago where Jessica, you know, couldn't fit in. She moved differently, had this different posture, and carried herself differently, right? Because she wasn't a Fremen, you know, she did not act with the Fremen ways, and Paul's a little better, but Not by much.
But
they still need to learn. He's
still needs to learn, it seems.
Mm-hmm. But something I noticed that was interesting was that the doors are moisture sealed. So, but like the first thing I think about, you know, when thinking about something like a gas, right, or a water vapor in this case, is that the only way the only way moisture can escape? Because I'm no expert, but couldn't moisture like seep into the ground, or sometime do they moisture seals all the surfaces somehow, maybe by coating the ground? But that just seems like a very large undertaking, you know.
Sure they took some sort of precaution to keep the moisture from seeping into the ground. Uh-huh. Maybe by packing the ground so it feels more watertight or something.
Maybe.
Either way, I think the loss of moisture is greater by keeping the door open than so that it escapes to the than it just escapes to the ground.
Oh well, of course, yeah. But I mean, I was just thinking since they're so careful with all their water, you know, and counting water.
Yeah.
Especially we saw that large reservoir of water back then.
Yeah.
Right? Back in a few chapters ago. I mean, I don't know how they keep all of nature's elements away from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was
speaking of that reservoir. I remember we got a bit of a like hint at the hydrophobic surface on the little instrument. So maybe they have some type of like hydrophobic surfaces around that cave. I don't know.
That instrument, you know, the water just went straight through, right? It didn't cling to that. There was no adhesion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Besides, they kind of need it to not leak out if they're going to measure it accurately. Or else they're going to be constantly losing the water.
Yeah, and how do they, you know, prevent it from evaporating, right? How do they prevent it, you know, how do they prevent other small creatures getting in, and how do they prevent the water from rotting, ensuring it stays sanitary?
Yeah, it needs to be in constant movement so it doesn't, like...
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't stay stagnant.
Yeah, it doesn't turn into stagnant, it doesn't turn into a fen. Yeah, it's just... There's so many things, because have y'all maintained a pool, or have y'all had like a pool before in your...
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, well, no, like at my old house, I had like a pool, and we ended up having to fill it in, even though it kind of depreciated our house's value.
Yeah,
because basically, you know, my dad had to put the underwater Roomba thing, you know, on the ground, and then like that thing that kind of sucks up the algae on the ground, on the bottom.
Yeah,
of the
pool. I know what you're talking
about. Also on the sides of the pool, how to, you know, keep the algae off of that, and then having to use that fishing net thing to get all the leaves and other, you know, dead things out, and then having to chlorinate the water, you know, and having to do that multiple times a week, you know, it's hard work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes like squirrels drown in there, and such a pain to get them out.
Well, that didn't happen to me. I'm glad that didn't happen to us. That's a whole other level.
It is pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah. So imagine having to maintain my pool, you know, it's not that many gallons. It's a lot of gallons, but it's not that many gallons. Right. So just imagine something, you know, orders of magnitude larger than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's just crazy. Yeah. They have to maintain that. So you think about it, you know, water is a simple substance, but to maintain it, you know, its purity is really difficult. So
it's a whole new different task.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would love to hear all about their maintenance of the water and everything, but I think that's probably outside of the scope of the storyline here. Yeah. So we just have to trust that they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, something that I noticed, that when the Fremen returning into their home into the siege, there always is like a rush of Fremen, and there's like a crush of bodies at the very entrance. So I know, I'm not sure if it's like a big deal to them or anything, but like after the past 2 years of hearing about like crowd surges and crushes in like tight spaces, I'm kind of nervous for these Fremen. Like, how are they gonna get in or out when there's an emergency, you know? Like, it's cool, but like I'm frightened for them. Like, what if they like crush themselves like everyone else did all those incidents?
I'm sure they have a back door where they can easily escape, but I think this design was intentional, because if there were an attacker, they would have to go through the door one by one instead of coming in all at once, which is much more dangerous.
I don't know though, because it's just kind of a crowd surge sort of, you know. So I think it's still big doors. It's just that there's just so many people and there's only one entrance and they're all coming in at once. Yeah, so I guess just funneling everyone one way in, one way out. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I doubt that they don't have back doors, but yeah. But I mean, for like
at least we know how. At least they're happy to be home, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're surging with excitement,
just jostling their way in.
Yep, indeed, and even this Farrakh person is so excited to be home because you know he loves the smell in his nostrils, right? Oh. It's the smell of home. I mean, and so that kind of brings me to my next point is that there's this massive stench in this place, right? I mean, it sort of makes sense since they don't really have water to cleanse themselves like we do, right? But it begs the question of exactly how do they clean themselves? Did it just go, you know, permanently dirty for forever? I don't know.
Well, I think the answer is simpler than you think. They don't.
Yeah,
they don't clean themselves.
Yeah,
maybe once a year, but for the most part they don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they can. I don't know though, like, I mean, I don't go long without showers, but doesn't your skin, you know, I mean, it's not good for your skin, definitely. Does it like rot or something?
I'm not sure. Actually, I watched a video where if you don't shower for around 30 days or something, it's like it gets better at a certain point.
Oh, yeah, really? I heard that at a certain point you develop some weird layer on your skin. Like, I think it's just like protective dead skin and stuff. But also,
you just smell, but it's just not as bad as you would think.
It's not at least like physically harmful.
Yeah.
It's a like other people problem as long as you get used to the smell.
Yeah. I mean, you do. I mean, if if you're giving off stink all day, then you get used to that real quick.
Yeah, Nola, you know the story about the guy who didn't shower for 60 years or something, right?
Yeah, I saw like an article, like I remember like a week or two ago, and I was like, he died or something when he first showered after so long. I was like, wait, what?
Oh, wait, really?
Wait, he died from a shower?
I'm not sure if it's coincidence or not, but like I don't know, like they washed him and then he died shortly after, but he was like super old, so like I couldn't tell his excitement or anything.
Correlation. Natural causes or just the shower.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the shower or not, but hey.
Oh yeah, an Iranian man known as the world's dirtiest man died at the age of 94 a few months after taking his first bath in decades.
Mm-hmm. Look, he's 94. I think
so old for not taking a shower. Like, he must have a god tier immune system.
Right,
you know, those Iranian hygiene, you know, it's just better.
Yeah, no wonder bats are have such a strong immune system.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. there's you know, an assailing host of pathogens. Yeah.
Anyways, the Fremen are just so used to the smell that they take a deep breath and say, "The smells of home," which confuses me a little bit because if you're so used to the smell, then wouldn't you lose the ability to smell it at a certain point? Like, how is it? How is it that he's able to still smell it after so long? Mm-hmm. My guess is that it's probably because the Fremen have heightened senses, but. Still doesn't completely make sense to me.
I feel like the Fremen never quite lose their sense of smell. Otherwise, they wouldn't ever be so attuned and accurate to the desert when they're out on the desert sands. However, I feel like back home, they're able to, like Paul kind of described later on, he kind of could like suppress the smell after like a while in the stench because like, I don't know. Like, I think you just like get used to it after like a couple hours or something. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Humans are adaptable, especially our sense of smell, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're right that their senses should become accustomed to smell rather fast. I mean, but probably since they've been out in the desert smelling a lot of different things, right? They've probably gotten used to that, and the body definitely adapts rather quickly. Even Paul, you know, just took a few hours here to adapt.
Yeah, it's his first time.
Yeah, it's his first time. So, I mean, the Fremen definitely, after a few days out in the desert, would adapt to that, and then when they come home, you know, it would be a familiar scent, but they'd be able to smell it. Yeah.
It's not like they mind it anyway. They kind of like it. Well, at least Farrakh does.
They like it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Farrakh is, you know, representative of the average Fremen.
For sure.
It implies safety. And safety is more important than just a few, you know, weird smells here and there. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I know that we as the audience already knew that Kynes was Liat, but I thought Paul was aware of this as well.
Me too.
Either through his powers or just that someone told him already. But now that the news of his death is here, he finally seems to be making the connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think he knew already. I mean, I think he's just a little incredulous. So he wants to confirm that it's the Liat he knows and not just some random Liat that was named.
Yeah, but I could see that.
But I mean, when, you know, when Farrakh, or was it Farrakh who said that? It's just, there's only one Liat, you know, then Paul knew.
Although it's never been explicitly stated that Paul was aware that Liat was Kynes.
That's true. I just kind of note that how after he found out, Paul now associates the feminine of Leia with Kynes, like ever constantly now. He kind of now addresses the Imperial planetologist as Liet Kynes, basically acknowledging both his Imperial identity but also his Fremen outer identity now.
Yeah, I mean, he's done so much for both parties, especially for the Fremen, that he deserves, both names, because he's an official in both sides, Imperial planetologist and also leader of the Fremen, right? So yeah, I mean, so he was a very respectable man on both sides, so he kind of deserved two names.
That title, he definitely deserves that title.
Right.
Okay. So Paul has to confront Jamis's wife Hera, which is very awkward. She calls him but a boy, but she should know better than anyone, especially as a Fremen, how quickly kids grow up to be adults, especially in harsh environments, because they need to grow up quickly in order to be in order to take on these deadly risks. But and so she keeps on harassing him, and she only backs away at the mention of the legend of the Lysan Al Gaib, which we desperately need more details on.
The thing is, I understand that Stilgar is trying to protect Paul from any unnecessary conflict with the Fremen, right? But the thing is, I just like him mentioning the Holy Sun Al Gaeb legend just kind of scares Paul a lot because he's scared of the simple notion that the Fremen will be brainwashed into whatever violent jihad that he's dreaming of because they think that he's a Lisan Al Gaeb, which the thing is, Paul kind of is, but also kind of isn't, you know? It's like a motif of the book that Paul is trying to live up to expectations of like the Reverend Mother and like the Fremen to be the legendary hero that they're all expecting, you know? But the thing is, the plot drives this motif that Paul needs to live up to it as a necessity in order to survive in all the harsh environments that he's been thrown into. It's just like that's just life, you know? He's got to adapt, even if he isn't. So.
Something else interesting that I noticed is that Hera has these water counters as jewelry, right? So it's almost just like she's hanging dollars on her ears.
For sure.
I mean, there must be an honor system with the Fremen, because if they had thieves, then she'd be an easy target. You can see all the it's just you're walking down a you're walking down the hood, and you see someone with dollar
Flaunting.
bills on their ears, $100 bills, right? So it's
I
flaunting, and you're
really.
just asking to get jumped. So I mean,
I mean, in our
Is
world, we have AirPods, which is essentially the same thing.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, I
Okay,
mean, then you have real gold jewelry. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
here
I
though,
think the
it
thing is.
doesn't it say that she has gold jewelry plus water counters, so that's just a double flex.
Yeah, she's wearing like all her wealth on her. I think the thing is, though, like in the Fremen society, firstly, I don't think it's common to have like these insider quarrels. Otherwise, they'd be dead a lot sooner, because of desert. But secondly, it's just that, like, that's why, like, I feel like Hera really prioritizes a strong man. That's why I feel like the wife is handed over to whoever bests the other man.
Oh,
So,
sort of like a trophy wife system.
yeah. But at the same time, it ensures that the wife is protected by someone strong. So I'm guessing that in Fremen society, it's pretty patriarchal, and the man is expected to be the strong one in the household to protect like his house and his family and his wife. And the water counters that come with whatever wealth that he acquired.
Right. I mean, it's basically the inheritance there. Not the inheritance, but the estate.
Okay, so we see that not only is Paul entitled to Jamis's quarters and children, he's also given the option to take Hera as his woman or servant. However, though, respect to Paul because he chooses the latter option. Yeah, Hera was complaining though and saying that she was still young, but in our world,
She's
she would have the
trying.
FBI after her in an instant.
But watch out.
Or maybe not, because the
FBI
justice
white
system is
wife
pretty
guy.
messed up.
Yeah, I mean, what I do know for sure is that Jessica definitely wouldn't have approved if Paul had chosen
Yeah,
any
for sure, for
differently than
sure. I
he
mean,
did.
let alone Chani, who knows what Chani would have thought about Paul, Paul and
Thank God
Hera.
Chani wasn't around.
The
Yeah, I
jealousy
mean,
is real.
I mean, Paul is a real player right here. Yeah, only
Schooling
Nolan can
widows,
relate.
Only Nolan
Whoa,
can
okay.
match his prowess.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah,
But yeah,
they're cut out too much.
the Fremen have interesting ways. I mean, instead of compensating the new widow, she's just, transferred to the next husband. Like, she's property, basically. I mean,
Yeah, I
yeah, I
noticed
mean, again,
that.
it's this patriarchal society, and I mean, it's also sort of implied that she's not really active in battle. Although she's not just a, you know, a stay-at-home mom kind of figure. She does stuff. She does, you know, say later that she's worked in steel suit manufacturing, which is, of course, pretty respectable, right? But, you know, still nothing, you know, as much as we would expect nowadays, yeah. Right, so we've reached my quote for the week, which is, caution's a worthy trait in a man who lead. So I think someone else has said something like this in this book. I can't quite recall.
I do feel like it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's either Kynes or Stilgar, one of like a Fremen people.
I feel like it's Fremen. Yeah, I feel like it is Fremen. It might have been Kynes, actually. But Paul is playing it safe here. I mean, he's not getting baited into the Fremen ways, right? Sure. Because he's not, you know, later he's not staying alone with Hera. And he's not taking Hera as his woman.
He's trying not to stay alone.
Well, yeah, he's trying not to. Right? And he also is trying not to, you know, adapt into their ways so quickly, right? But there's also a bit of foreshadowing that sort of counters that, because Stilgar is saying that Paul has the qualities to lead, maybe, you know, a group such as the Fremen, but that is what Paul is trying to avoid, right? So he fears this jihad, but the thing is, he can't really avoid assimilation and leadership, because if he doesn't assimilate, he's just sort of, I mean, he'll be an outcast, right? I mean,
yeah.
But if he does assimilate, you know, it's very easy that he'll just kind of tip the scales in favor of the jihad, right? So, I mean, he's still being drawn into his own prophecy, but he's trying his best to not make it happen. So he's kind of fighting both sides of fate for himself. Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't think that, like, he really has a, like, he can't really avoid it, though, because if he becomes an outcast, like, the Fremen ditch him because he's too much of a burden and he just hasn't adjusted. After all, like, he can't be the same stray that they brought home, you know, or else they'll just, they'll actually leave him like a stray. They'll just drop him.
Right, he doesn't really have a choice. The only reason they're holding him in right now is because, one, because of the legend, Lysen Al Gaib, and two, because of his weirding ways.
Yeah.
I mean, he was able to defeat one of their stronger warriors, Janus, so I'm sure they respect him to a certain extent.
Uh-huh. But he's got to pay his dues, you know?
Right, he's still got to prove himself,
right?
Even after all of that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, well, it looks like Hera doesn't really blame Paul for Janus' death, which is good.
Yeah,
there's no more need for any unnecessary bloodshed. So instead, she seems quite touched that he shed moisture for the dead.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I did notice was how, like, Hera also said that if she was in Paul's place, she definitely couldn't have done the same, which was like, I mean, we get the importance of water there, but it's also kind of sad, but it's fine. The Fremen don't cry like that. But I'm also like kind of shocked that Paul, in this time when she was freaking out, really tried to use his voice against her. Not against her, but like on her in order to calm her down. I'm surprised especially the other Fremen surrounding didn't like stop Paul. But thankfully, it ended up that, like, even though she noticed that the voice was being used on her, she still grew calm, whether it's because of the voice or whether it's just because she collected herself. I'm not really sure.
I think it's interesting that they can tell that the voice is being used on them, because a lot of times, you know, before when the voice was used, I don't think that the victim, well, I guess victim for lack of a better term, knew that the voice was being used. You know, take, for example, Hawat, who sort of just sat down instantly before realizing anything. I mean, later, very shortly, he realized that he had been controlled by the voice, right? But
he just felt it first.
Yeah, but he just, his body processed it first before his mind, right? So honestly, it's good that they can tell that the voice is being used on them, because otherwise it just seems like some creepy subliminal mind control scheme, you know, just getting into their subconscious and telling them what to do.
It's just
you know, this sort of undercover mind control. It's just kind of, right, but
they're able to instantly brainwash you just by talking to you.
I mean, even if they're being mind controlled, at least, you know, they know they're being mind controlled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's better than the other. It's better than just not knowing.
Yep. And thinking of it was all of your own free will.
That's the worst part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Paul sort of makes a large commitment here. Right. So, and I have to say, in a lot of literature, and especially in Fremen culture, you know, remember back when Stilgar had fought Jessica and the Jessica was asking Stilgar about his word and how much it meant in terms of their safety. Mm-hmm. And Stilgar said, you know, oh, we have no papers and no contracts, nothing to sign, but, you know, we have our word and no Fremen violates his word. So, so especially in the Fremen society, right, the word is all powerful And so Paul just casually says, as long as you live, you'll have a place with me. Of course, referring to Hera, right? It just seems a bit impulsive, yes. A bit reckless, right? Because he's just tacking on the burdens for himself. I mean, either he breaks this promise, in which case he loses a lot of his credibility, or, you know, he has to keep Hera around when, you know, she may be, I'm not saying she is, but she may be a liability for Paul in the future, right? So, yeah, I mean, there's just, yeah. It's just not the best decision, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Paul is kind of in a tricky position because it's really hard not to say such comforting words to especially someone who is a widow because of Paul. But also, yeah. It's just that, like, he kind of, yeah, he has to put these, like, he tried to use the voice on her. I don't think it worked as well as Paul thought it would because she recognized that he was using the voice on her. So now he has to make these fake promises. And I feel like Paul's trying really hard to, I guess, move on to his priorities. So he's like giving these false promises in order to calm her down. But at the same time, I feel like Paul's really leaning on the deal that still got explained where, like, after like what, a year or two, he could like make her a free woman or something. But yeah. I'm not sure under this scenario whether that can be possible because he promised to take care of her forever. So even if she's
well, free, not forever, like, as long as she sticks with him. Uh-huh. So yeah, once she's so, free, like, she doesn't have to stick with him.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. Is child support a thing in a Fremen society?
I don't think they have courts.
I don't know.
Right.
Uh-huh. But actually, it gets to my quote of this chapter, which is when Paul asked Hera, don't you mourn him? And then Hera responded, in the time of mourning, I'll mourn him. So in this, little exchange, I find Hera's response, firstly, to be a lot more collected than her initial outburst towards Paul. But I also believe that this interaction between Paul and Hera is like a great teaching point for all of us, like the audience, that different people deal with loss in many different ways. And for some people, like, it's a long process, and for others, it's a shorter process. It kind of all depends on the individual and what is enough to really satisfy their emotions, I guess. Much of it's also like heavily dependent on, firstly, like one's cultural attitude towards death, but also like how their parents taught them how to approach it. And also, like, additionally, how deeply, like, a person understands their own emotions, so, like, how they personally, like, feel that they're doing with their dark feelings inside. And it's just, like, this entire, like, accepting thought process that, like, that's occurring here is quite, I find, profound for Herbert because he's writing this in the 60s. I feel that, at least to me, it feels like a revolutionary idea that people back then where things were a lot more societal norms didn't like shouldn't have such a revolutionary idea like this, because even now I feel societally just like there's many different ways that people grieve. However, there's obviously like, okay, I want to say there's obviously a correct and a wrong way to grieve, but there seems to be like a correct and a wrong way to grieve, you know what I mean? Because people like judge people for being like less human if you don't like cry and bawl your eyes out for like a week or two. But truth is, like, everyone grieves, and there's just, like, no normal rhyme to it.
Right. There's videos of those guys dancing with the coffin on their shoulders.
The coffin dance. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah. Okay, but, honestly, like,
but even like, so, it's a culture, yeah, cultural
it's,
thing.
It's cultural. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, they celebrate. They're just like Dia de los Muertos, you know. They celebrate their death. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
also, I mean, we I laugh, but it's also a very cool thing.
Yeah.
Wait, can I say it? Because I watched Wakanda... The second Black Panther movie, and there was actually something about this, but I'm not sure if I should spoil it.
I mean, just give a spoiler if you don't want to get spoiled. Warning. Skip right. 30 seconds. Yeah.
Skip 30 seconds if you don't want to get spoiled. But like when the queen died, they celebrated. Like she was sad, but they put time aside and they had like their ritualistic dance. So I thought that was really cool to like just see how, I guess, dancing was part of their like way of accepting death.
Yeah, it's not a real culture, but some...
I'm not saying it's, like, a real culture, but I'm sure, like, it's got roots in some, like...
Yeah, in some real...
It's based off of something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's so many, like, cultural differences, and it's just, like, honestly, like, this whole approach towards death in Western culture is so, like... I don't want to say overrated, because, like, it shouldn't be the norm.
It's just our own way, I guess. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, yes, death is a sad thing, but also, you know, there's a lot of... I mean, I don't want to say there are positives to take, of course, but it's just there's a way
it's
to
just
make
a natural thing.
There's a way to be able to, you know, move on from that and, you know, celebrate the life of someone who's just passed, right? And stuff like that. So I feel, and I mean, Hera, I mean, I was going to call her superficial, but especially after the discussion, I can't really say that she's superficial. It's really just a culture gap, fair, right? But I mean, basically what I will say is that she seems to have fully adapted to this Fremen way of being able to move on and being able to, you know, mourn when the time is right and not, you know, hanging on to it and letting it kind of incapacitate her, right? Or I forgot, is that the word? Yeah. So,
So,
I mean, Paul is still, however, kind of this more traditional Western, yeah, sort of, you know, death as a tragedy sort of thing, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
We see that Paul is still kind of like hanging on to his Atreides values right now, like resisting a change into Fremen. Like,
I think he has to though, in order to not fall into his jihad.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, he's on such a narrow, like, fine line. Remember when like they were approaching Jamis's like ceremony, and Jessica and Paul were just trying to like guess what was the right move. I feel like Paul's being kind of inconsiderate by not considering everything and like what his actions might implement or like might implicate about himself by like not being accepting right now. But at the same time, it's understandable. He's going through a lot, so he probably just not on his mind, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, moving on to more pressing matters, it looks like the Fremen are going to abandon their current location soon because the Sardaukar is still hunting them, and the best course of action is to avoid conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Paul, again, he has one of his vision attacks, right? I mean, it better not happen in something like the middle of a battle, you know, all those battle scenes where, you know, they get take one hit and then it's a flashback. I was never good enough. And then they get hit again. It's another flashback. You know, I was always the worst fighter at my academy. And then,
it was at this moment when I realized I had a talent and I grew it.
Sifu found me in the darkness.
and then it's like I trained for years, and then,
yeah, and then he just gets some massive power boost from out of nowhere, and yeah, he's just the main villain.
Yeah, speak of a Deus Ex Machina, like, honestly, that's just, I mean
it's a formula that works, so
yeah, but yeah, I mean, I don't want to see it here. I'm not a fan of Deus Ex Machinas in general, but especially, you know, I don't want to see it here. I want to see Paul grow his own skills, right? I don't want to
without
see
the
some,
backstory.
Some, yeah, I don't. I mean, we have the backstory. Yeah, we don't need. Yeah, any, of course, we won't get the backstory again. But I also hope he doesn't just get some random, you know, power boost on over
our friend.
He better work
and
for
love.
every ounce of his strength. He's already talented.
Yeah, I want enough. A good explanation.
Yeah, I mean, he's already talented enough. That's all he needs for talent. Now we need to see his hard work. Right.
Yeah, so actually, they're trying to evacuate right now, and Hera is like, let's not forget the Dew Collectors. And Paul is just now being like, the Dew Collectors, why are we worrying about Dew Collectors when our lives are on the line? And then, like, Hera's like, didn't they teach you anything in the wherever it is you come from? And then, like, Paul was like, not about Dew Collectors. It's just like, I like how Paul responds, because, like, of course not. Like, why would we be worried about Dew Collectors? Because it's not important. But then Hera describes the concept of why Dew Collectors are so important to Fremen society. But one thing that I'm worried about from her description is how that they're visible from a high place because of their glistening in the dawn. So to me, like, technically you're in a Thopter, so you're in a high place. So when you're flying over like a Fremen area, wouldn't it be a dead giveaway when there's like a bunch of like glistening little plants on the ground? Be like, wow, there should probably be a Fremen siege around here since there's so much planted. I don't know.
Well, I'm not. Do they know that it's the Fremen doing that?
They probably don't, but like, it's just unnatural. So like, anything unnatural stands out in a desert.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. But honestly, though, I had no idea why Hera was so confused about Paul not knowing anything. Because doesn't she know how secretive the Fremen are?
Yeah,
almost nothing is known about the Fremen.
Uh-huh.
Even Tuek, who lived in Arrakis for far longer than Paul and Jessica have, knows almost nothing about him.
Right. Yeah.
That's true.
So it's weird that she just expects him to know everything. Like, even as the main character, he still needs to learn in order to grow.
Although I guess it's a bit understandable because it's like Paul's reaction if someone asked him what an ocean or a river is, right? And Paul would just be, "You don't have those, right? You don't have those on Iraq." Oh wait, I forgot where we were, right? So So I mean, I think it's just again another culture gap, right? But although Paul knows their ways, he has a ways to go in terms of knowledge. But anyways,
I just think she should be a bit more understanding.
Yeah. Fair. I mean, yeah, he is an outworlder, so, or otherworlder, so I mean, it shouldn't really be
I don't
expected
think
that
she
he
knows
knows.
that, though. I don't think she knows that he's an
Oh,
outworlder.
no,
Well, I
she
mean,
knows
she could
because
tell.
you've not the eyes of the Abad. Yeah, I mean,
That's true.
yeah. So
I guess, yeah.
I mean, if you're on Arrakis, you've consumed a lot of spice. Yeah. So,
You're
yeah.
on that good stuff. Just kidding.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, but anyways, I mean, personally, I think this Dewey Collector scheme really showcases Herbert's knowledge as an ecologist. I mean, it's really brilliant in its simplicity, right? And it definitely goes a long way in helping the Fremen towards their ecological goal because, of course, being able to draw water from this arid landscape is something that's not easy, and but they need every drop they can get. So,
Yeah, I think it's just cool to see a bit more Fremen technology here,
Yeah, more innovation. Yeah.
especially explained in a way that we can actually understand.
Right. It's not
Where
some
you ain't got no
crazy.
PhDs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe we'll understand it in, 10 years when if we have PhDs, but not
I mean, even with PhDs, how are you going to understand fictional equipment?
now. That's true.
We'll have a better idea of what went into it, I guess, because
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Herbert had a PhD. Probably did.
Yeah, he
That's
seems
a
smart
modern
enough.
field. Yeah, well, I mean, in order to write a book of this, a series of this magnitude, you
He had a
gotta have
big
some
brain for
brains.
sure.
Yeah, you gotta have some brains.
So one thing that I found kind of problematic about basically this entire, I guess, scope of time that Paul spent with Hera, it's just like his treatment of Hera is kind of problematic. Or maybe not exactly his treatment, but like the overall chapter's attitude towards Hera. So obviously I understand like Paul's perspective in these moments. Like he's trying to like move on because he's got bigger things to worry about. Sardaukar is coming after him. They're gonna kill him. And like he's got a job to like reclaim the throne and become like Atreides ruler again. And like right now he's just being like hung down by this woman that he's somehow entitled to now because he won a duel he didn't even ask for. But the thing is, he's gonna realize that Hera's importance is also like while that's important to Paul, to Hera, the survival and like her children's well-being is also important to Hera. And I feel like Paul is kind of being a little inconsiderate here by being so dismissive of her concerns. But like I don't really know how to weigh this because like I understand what Paul's thinking, but I'll just like understand what Hera's thinking. So it's like rip, guys. It's just we're just in a
Indeed.
time crunch, Like
Yeah,
it's time.
it's not easy. It's not easy to make a decision, yeah.
Well,
So
at
also
least oh, okay, yeah.
no, like you could go.
No, you can continue.
All right, but like, just like this interaction though, kind of makes me feel bad for Hera because the way that like she's being painted as being dismissed, kind of just like paints Fremen society as very patriarchal because like she's always giving way to the male figure or like the main figure, I guess, which is Paul now, because she's kind of like a domestic wife who's trying to reclaim her place in the household, right, by trying to remedy whatever mistake she feels like she's having by claiming the age-old misogynistic narrative of like she's still pretty, she's still young, and she's still capable of taking care of the children and the household, but along with like any chores associated with her husband and the house, kind of like maintaining the stillsuits, It's
Yeah.
kind of like this very just very patriarchal, like I guess baby boomer generation type of stuff, just like
I
really
see.
indicative of the time period that Herbert was writing this of. It's just really showing in the book right now.
Right. This book was written in the 1960s, and even then, there was so much gender discrimination, I would say. It was only I think in more recent times that there's been a shift where
Yeah.
women are getting like,
More
are being
recognized
treated,
and
yeah,
yeah,
and treated
more
more
equality.
equally.
Yeah, I mean, it's dates all the way back, the first women's rights movement, all the way back with the Seneca Falls and whatnot. But that was, far longer before than anything actually got done. And even now, there's still, persisting gender gaps in a lot of workplaces and stuff, which are still,
Even though you get
ongoing
legal
efforts.
protection, like there's still the narrative that has to change.
Yeah, well, Paul, at least he guarantees Hera's well-being as long as she's with him, which is better than nothing.
It's
However,
one thing shot.
you still have to remember though that the story is kind of like a medieval age plot taking place in a futuristic world. So the treatment of servants and women are just far different from what you expect in comparison to the modern world. So, and also if he treats her too nicely, she may begin to step out of line.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this seems rather inconsiderate and misogynistic in our eyes. And I mean, Paul perhaps can get excused for his behavior given the situation he's in, but I mean, it just continues to reveal these aspects of the Fremen culture, whether they're positive or negative, right? It's just a lot. of things that we have to absorb as we kind of move, walk through this Fremen society, you know, because we're getting basically a rundown in narrative form of all these different traditions that differ from ours, and we need to kind of think in their way. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to slam the Fremen culture too hard, though, because they do have a place of authority for women, like the Reverend Mother and like the different system. And we also see that Chani is still a warrior, so like they're still highly respected inside Fremen society, so there's still avenue for them.
Yeah. Okay, so talking about similar culture or traditions, so even on Arrakis, the Fremen children have to go to school. So I guess I shouldn't complain so much about having to go as well.
But, education.
Yeah, but to be fair, they don't get grades, and I'm sure they don't deal with college apps either.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure they'd rather deal with college apps than getting eaten by a worm.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, but we're kind of blessed to have to write all these dozens of supplemental essays. You know, it's kind of morbidly blessed. I mean, for us, it's basically just mental health at stake, not really physical health. But I mean, it's also interesting that Liet Kynes, you know, was the one who actually started this culture of education, right? Because it's almost like he's bringing progressive and modern ideals into a rather traditional culture, right?
I mean, yeah, he's revolutionizing the Fremen.
Yeah, and he's equipping them with not just tools and modern techniques, but also with knowledge, right? Yeah, so
which maybe he was the one who brought him the materials to make the stole suit.
Perhaps. I mean, yeah, I feel like the snow suits may have existed for longer because
but it could have like improved. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he may have done improvements and stuff. I mean, I'm sure he, you know, anywhere you go in Fremen culture, you could probably see a few traces of Liet, right? Yeah, but I mean, Liet's really done so much for these Fremen. They better now go fulfill his dreams. I mean, yeah, they have the this obligation.
Very big dreams.
Indeed. Yeah, I just love like Liet's dedication to the Fremen, like how far he's thought ahead. Not only did he think about like his college's role, but also just like down to Fremen society, like even the children, he made sure that they all had like a future, you know, like he made sure that they all have potential to grow even when he's gone.
Mm-hmm. So he set them up on some sort of track. So even if he's gone, even if the conductor's gone, the train can still continue to run.
Yeah, and we see it like now, like it's still working because like they even though he's dead now, and even though like the Fremen know that, they still hang on to his word and education, while it is still I guess it's just words right now, but it just proves that there's still so far more they could reach out to, and there's still so much more to learn. And the Fremen will continue to keep that in their minds when they move forward.
Right. Okay. So now we get to my quote this week, and it goes, "It came to him that he was surrounded by a way of life that could only be understood by postulating an ecology of ideas and values." So I think this quote portrays how lost Paul is on this planet, even with his absurdly high intelligence. And even with his prerequisite information from his powers, he just doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah, he really doesn't.
The extremity of the planet isn't something that can be so easily overcome, even as a prodigy.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things for him to pick up. And he knows their ways, but not well enough to, you know, he doesn't know everything. Yeah. Especially about the planet and stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot for him to learn still.
I feel like he's just like a young child who's got like a big jacket. Like the jacket's supposed to protect him from the cold, but like he has the potential, you know, but it's just not growing yet. He just needs to grow a bit more. He just needs to like fill it out a bit more. Uh-huh. You know, so it's just like, he's just developing slowly.
Yeah. He needs to replace Kynes' shoes and surpass them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so I guess like here comes the question of like, is it fate that like is there fate in the Dune world? Like, is all this person's life predetermined, or do they actually have a choice? Because right now for Paul, he feels himself sinking into Fremen culture, despite him being assisted by all his visions of like the future and the past. But yet he still, despite everything, like all the assistance, still fears the inevitable lead to the violent jihad. I don't know.
Well, talking about fate, maybe in the Dune world there is a sort of fate because it is written by a writer, so there will be a fate, I think. But at the same time, I think Paul has the power to have some control over it, and he's already making some sort of steps to avoid the jihad that he fears, which is he didn't change his name to Usul. I think he changed it to Muad'Dib Usul or something, right?
Or no, it was Paul Muad'Dib.
Oh yeah, Paul Muad'Dib. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Muad'Dib.
They just call him Usul.
Yeah. It's his tribe name. It's like their secret name.
So he's already making the steps to controlling his fate. And honestly, I would like to believe that it isn't predetermined and that you have some sort of control over your life, which I think is true to an extent. But yeah, there's definitely moments where everything feels scripted and that you're just going through the motions that were already set out for you.
Sometimes at school, you'd be feeling that low and just be like, bro, I think I'm just supposed to go to the next class.
Exactly. You just feel like an NPC, and I'm not too sure how to feel about that. Yeah, but anyways, getting back to Paul, I wonder if Dune will be one of those stories where the main protagonist ends up embracing his fate and that allows him to take control of it.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. It's interesting because it's been so clear that, especially in this universe, I mean, the future really is indefinite. Paul had that dream back in Chapter 3, you know, another example to tack onto your example that, you know, he and Chani, you know, Chani was asking him to, I don't remember, was it sing him a song or recite him a poem or something like that?
Sing him a song.
Yeah.
Sing me a song about your world.
About your whole world, Usul. Yeah. Wait, what's Usul? Oh, wait. Yeah, so, I mean, and the scene really played out rather differently in the real life in the book, right? And there were a lot of, the overall idea was still the same, but there were a lot of differences that made it pretty clear that there's a way to change the future, or at least the projected future, right? So I don't know why, especially after so many examples of where his future, his foresight wasn't accurate, I mean, I don't know why he thinks that he's so locked into this one future, but I think it's more clear that if he doesn't change his mindset, he'll never adapt to Fremen ways, like I said towards the beginning of this episode, and thus he'll not survive if he doesn't, you know, not become an outcast.
At this rate,
either assimilate or die. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way to escape your fate, you know, just die, I guess. Yeah,
quite the poor way to do that, yeah. Uh-huh.
Darwinism at his finest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now Paul has entered whatever you call a Fremen house, and he went to the tent, and now he's sitting on the couch now, and he sent Hera to go grab him some food. But before Hera went to grab him some food, she tried to, you know, flirt with him a little. He's like, you know what, you know, you may be young, but you don't look unattractive, you know. And like, all like the thing is, like, all that Paul can still think about and this other woman's house is, he's still only thinking about Chani. And it's like, wow, Chani is just like me, you know? We just lost a father recently. It's just like,
he's got like, his priorities straight. I mean, what a good man.
He's grasping at straws. I mean, he's just
like, kind of. He's lost a father. Like, how many other childless orphans are out there, Paul? Like, chill out. You're not that special. Okay?
I know. It's just, he's just looking for anything, you know? He's looking for a conversation starter.
Even I think I can relate to Paul and Chani as well.
Just kidding.
Fortunately, my father is still present within my life, but yeah. I'm interested to see how this event brings them closer together.
Me too. Like, he better start counting those differences, because when they start living together, you know, I heard that's when the trouble starts.
I did hear that too. I haven't experienced that yet because
I can't say I moved in yet.
As Hera says, we're still young, but
still have time to adapt.
Yep. The ship sails ever further.
I wonder how old Hera is. I think Fremen would marry young because they need to bear children early because there's a chance for them to die early on.
I mean, she's probably, you know, late 20s maybe, like, or because 25. I feel like late 20s or early 30s to mid 30s, because if she really was like really young, then
that probably wouldn't be an issue.
Probably she wouldn't be continually emphasizing it. And also, how was it stated how old her kids were? Because I think her kids are, you know, like a few, like pretty, you know, at least like six or so, right?
Yeah, at least
they're,
six.
They're out playing.
She's probably at the latest, youngest, 25 years old.
But I'm assuming more than that because she had another husband before, right? So.
Oh, wait, she did?
Yeah.
She did, because Jameis bested that guy for her.
Joff.
Or it could have just been two guys go fighting over this one girl.
No, like, I don't think so. I think it was.
She married I think she like actually was the other guy's, I don't want to say property, but like, she was dedicated to the other guy. guy, and then he got handed over to Jaehyun.
Oh, I must have missed that.
And then now she's handed over to Paul, right? So,
So I don't think it's too bad. So you know, just like it's not. You know what? I can't just stop talking. But one thing that I was noticing when I was reading my book was that I was nearing the end of this chapter, right? And then I was reading the book, and I was like, it said harsh, but like in a capital H. And I was like, you mean Hera, right? Like harsh doesn't make sense in this context. So it's just like, why am I catching a typo on Hera's name in my published hardcover Gilded Doom book? Like this thing, like I'm sure it costs at least $30, you know? Like, okay, I didn't pay for it, but I'm sure someone paid for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, while it's insignificant and easy to overlook, I definitely wouldn't hire whichever editor was supposed to spell check like Herbert's book.
Yeah, our PDF is better than your book right now.
Although our PDF has its fair share of typos.
Yeah.
I noticed that. I went back to check the PDF. I'm like, where is this typo? Like, is this actually a typo? It was a typo. Like, disappointed Herbert. Yeah. Actually, no editor. But like, on that note, this is a perfect way to introduce our sponsor, Grammarly. Grammarly is... Just kidding, y'all. We are still unsponsored. We're still broke. So
yeah, please sponsor.
Ike, I would like to introduce our real sponsor, Raid Shadow Legends.
Okay.
Or am I kidding? We're still broke, guys.
Yeah, we're still broke. We don't have the, you know, we don't have the popularity to pull sponsors yet, but we're getting there.
You don't know. Like,
yeah,
I hope one day.
If anybody knows any contacts with Grammarly or Raid Shadow Legends, I would be open to know.
We're open.
DLC.
Yeah, you know, for business inquiries, please email.
Do not enter at gmail.com.
Indeed. That is okay. Can't really blame Herbert though for this typo. I mean, gotta say the editors are more at fault, so fire the editors instead. Yeah. I mean, Herbert. I mean, if Herbert made a million typos, it's still the editor's job to figure it out, right? So.
It is still the editor's job.
Yep.
Okay. So now we're nearing the very end of the chapter, and wow, the chapter ends on the question if the kids will accept a new stepfather. It's just like a whole rom-com. It's like when a father moves in, it's like, will they fit together? This family of four.
Find out next episode.
Find out next episode on the Do Not Enter podcast, where we go over, you know.
Shameless plug.
Paul's family life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a bit of foreshadowing of like potential conflict between Paul and the children, because their children are peeking in after Hera, and they have their hands resting on the hilt of their small Kinjo-type Chris knives. And all that Paul can think about is that those Fremen children are as ferocious as the men. I was like, wow.
As an adult.
Yeah, as an adult. And I was like, ouch, Paul. Like, that's kind of creepy, but okay. Like,
more what an ominous way to end this week's episode. Although I'm excited to see how Paul interacts with the children.
Indeed, yeah, very
the subplot
exciting.
Of Paul as a dad.
Oh no, Paul has become the father figure.
Paul, father at 15.
I mean, Fremen culture, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, on that note, I believe that concludes the discussion for this episode of the Do Not Enter podcast. Make sure to read halfway through chapter 37, ending at, quote, she found it within the drug she had swallowed. And tune in next time when we discuss it. As always, thanks to all of you listeners for being patient with us and being interested in our thoughts. Follow us on Instagram at DoNotEnter, Reddit @U/DoNotEnter, Twitter at DoNotEnter, and email us at DoNotEnter@gmail.com. That is DUNENOTENTER@gmail.com, especially if you have sponsorship inquiries. Contact us with questions, feedback, or I dare say...
I think it might be this time, or my turn.
We could just leave it blank if you don't want to put yourself through.
It could just be deleted.
Yeah,
deleted.
Or I dare say redacted, right? So,
redacted.
But of course, if we've made any mistakes, don't hesitate to let us know, and we will do our best to fix those in the upcoming episodes. Give us a review on iTunes or Spotify. It only takes a few seconds of your time. Of course, just make an account on iTunes or Spotify, go to our show, and click the 5-star button, because that's the only thing that exists. And maybe leave a nice comment or two. The benefits of that are twofold. One, it lets us know that we're doing a good job and motivates us to keep creating content for you guys. And two, it helps get us up the charts so that, you know, we can bring this podcast and Dune to a wider variety of listeners and a larger audience. So yeah, we would really appreciate it if you took the time to do that. Otherwise, I think that's about it. So have a great week, and we will see you all back very soon.
See you guys.
Bye.